On today's show, the Nuggets have a chance to take a 3-1 lead in the finals, how the Heat can bounce back in Game 4. Plus, has this already become Nikola Jokic's league? We talk about that, plus some big names that could be on the move this summer. All of that and much more on today's Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On NBA. I'm Wes Goldberg here with Adam Matas. However you might be listening, tuning in on YouTube, Odyssey, or your favorite podcast app, thanks so much for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. We're talking about the NBA Finals, a pivotal Game 4 tonight, Friday night. The Heat season very much on the line because if they lose, they go down 3-1. The odds of them winning three straight, coming back slim to none at that point. And then on the flip side, obviously, if the Nuggets go up 3-1, they have a chance to take a commanding lead in this series, as it would go back to Denver. So I wanted to talk about a few trends through the first three games of these finals, Adam. And the one that sticks out to me is Denver's dominance below the arc. They're shooting 60% on two-pointers. They're 70% of their field goal attempts have been on two-pointers. How have the Nuggets been so dominant from two-point range and in the paint, Adam?
Well, you know, this is one of the reasons I've had confidence in the Denver Nuggets for years. You know, obviously before losing Jamal Murray, but this season going into the playoffs, Denver's offense is not one thing. It has the ability to beat you so far any way that is required. And I kept saying when people would say, hey, they're going to have to play the Lakers, you're going to have to go against Gobert, you're going to have to go against this or that, I always say it doesn't matter because no team has every answer. They just have a lot of them, and Denver has every answer offensively, and I think they'll adjust. And so Miami made a decision in this series. They want to take away the spacing. They want to take away Michael Porter and KCP, two guys that are having terrible offensive series, and say, we're going to push out there. Earlier in the series, they tried to take away Jamal Murray. I think he cracked that code last night, and that was one of the big things. But if Denver has said, okay, if you're going to take that away, if you're going to take away the kickouts, we're going to beat you on all interior, and we'll go to it over and over and over again. And they dominate the paint in the regular season, but usually it's a mix. The inside leads to the outside and vice versa. Right now, Miami has made a decision, and Denver says, okay, we're going to put up a 117 offensive rating. Really, well, according to Cleaning the Glass, 121 offensive rating before garbage time last night. And they did it by making 5 3-pointers in the entire game. Absolutely absurd efficiency.
In this economy. Unbelievable.
It's just they have an answer, Wes. They just have answers. And Jokic and Murray in particular can mold their games to fit whatever opening you give them. And no defense can take away everything.
This is why I kind of pushed back on the notion in general of turning Nikola Jokic into a scorer, right? Because we've seen what he does when he's in full scoring mode in this series. Now, in Game 3 was the first sort of wilt-like game that he had. He had 41 points in Game 2, but it was like a weird 41 points that Miami felt like they could live with. But in Game 3, it was whatever it was, 34 points, 21 rebounds, 10 assists, a triple-double, or what, something like in that range. That's what you don't want if you're the Miami Heat, where he's getting to his spots and then he's making decisions. Do I want to go and score? Do I want to kick out? Do I want to do these things? When he's getting those defensive rebounds and sprinting down the floor and finding his teammates in transition, getting Aaron Gordon on those lobs and all these things, like the full menu was open for Jokic last night. And I think some of that was Miami just letting go of the rope a little bit defensively, because we've seen them limit some of those things here and there through the first two games, and especially in Game 2. But the thing I keep coming back to is Jokic is going to get whatever he wants when he gets into position below the basket. He is such a good post player. He is so patient. He has so many like little moves and dance steps and spins and all these things that if you're Bam Adebayo and you're giving up 3 inches and 30 pounds, there's only so much that you're going to be able to do, especially against somebody that has such good touch in that range as Nikola Jokic, where if he gets within, I don't know, what would you say, 6 feet? It's basically money at that point. You know, maybe even a little bit further.
Well, when people have talked about Jokic, man, they always talk about the passing, you know, maybe rebounding if you get to it. The thing that I think you start to stack the elite skills, the S-tier skills on top of them, and it all reveals itself in the end. And I think the thing people are realizing is, one, he has some of the best hands ever. I mean, we see him grab loose balls and rebound. Some of the best hands of any player, let alone a big, we've ever seen. But that soft touch is another thing people just don't talk about. You know, he's got a jumper or this or that. No. 8 feet, just have to like feather the ball up there and let it die on the rim and go in. he's as good as anyone I've ever seen from any position. I said the other day, he has the best floater of anybody ever. And they're like, well, of any big, but there's guards. I said, I don't care. Put him up against any guard you want. He makes floaters at like 70% rate. It's unbelievable how good his touch is. And it's a huge part of why you can't hold him to any one thing, is because he can make shots from all these weird spots on the court.
Yeah, and then dress back to the post-ups, shooting 55% on post-ups in the playoffs right now. That's an insane number. In 2023, you know, you're talking about the fact that they had that rating in game three with 5 3-pointers, and they're doing this in the post. Like, it's a total throwback with what Nikola Jokic is doing. And I do want to talk a little bit more about, like, Jokic's star on the rise later in the show. But in terms of this series, I think that's the thing that the Heat have had the biggest problem with, because they are undersized and they're going to play zone. And I don't think that they have tried to turn Jokic into a scorer because they're fronting him so much. Bam Bam Adebayo is working so hard to just deny him the ball, because they know once he gets the ball, especially on the block or in the paint, it's kind of game over. And they've been working so hard to deny him. And I thought last night, because Miami, Wednesday night, because Miami was missing so many shots at the basket and Denver's doing such a good job of you know, kicking ahead and transition and pushing it almost like they were turnovers, even though the Heat only had four turnovers in that game, it felt like a lot more just because Denver was always in transition, always pushing the tempo. And I thought Jokic was a big part of that. The rebounding advantage, obviously a big part of Miami's misses, and also Denver getting those loose balls and doing a better job boxing out. I don't know. It feels like the size has been, if there's two stories for each, if there's a story for each team, it's Denver's size so far through the first three games. And then Miami's 3-point variance has been sort of their biggest story.
And I think Denver's defense, you know, played a part in all of these things. Miami does, we know, go hot and cold from three, but I thought last night they didn't get great looks. In game two, they got a lot of great looks. I thought Denver had a lot fewer mistakes, especially on off-ball guard-to-guard actions. Denver was atrocious in game two at giving up. Both guys go to one, and one guy's wide open in the corner. A lot of times that was Max Strus and Gabe Vincent, great shooters, and they're wide open in the corner off of blown coverages. Denver didn't shoot themselves in the foot. And last night, I thought they had great interior defense. You know, Jimmy Butler got going early and was attacking the paint and had a lot of success, but that ran out even a little over time. And Denver's defense is the key to the series, because when they get stops, everything compounds. When they get stops, to your point, it's not transition points that they're scoring, but it's transition breakdowns that they're creating that later become points. They're getting cross matches. One of the reasons that Miami is fronting Jokic is because they don't want him running a bunch of screens. They don't want him posting up, but they also don't want him like creating switches. But when you have to sprint back in the half court because you missed a shot, it's a lot harder, because maybe you have a cross match on the guards. You don't even need the ball screens. So Denver's defense to me has been the key. And it's ironic, because coming into the playoffs, that was the big question, right? Jokic in particular, two-way player or not, Denver, are they a serious defensive team? They played serious defense last night against a very focused Miami Heat offense.
It was their best defensive game of this series. I don't think that's even debatable. Yeah. In terms of adjustments of what Miami can do to try to counter some of this stuff in game four, I do wonder if we're getting to the point where they have to align Bam's minutes with Nikola Jokic's. It's something that I brought up going into game three, but considering that the Heat had won game two and you're back at home, I just don't think that you want to blink in that way for the Heat. But now that you've lost the game, I think you have to really seriously look at that in terms of, look, Cody Zeller's minutes were better in game three, but they're still net negatives for the series. Right. I don't know how much more you could afford to go that route. I think that there's maybe even opportunities that if you're aligning Bam's minutes with Jokic's, when Jokic is off the floor and Jeff Green is playing center, if you're Miami, maybe going small with either Kevin Love at center or maybe even like a Haywood Highsmith at the five look, like we saw sometimes against Boston, where all of a sudden you've got a five out offense and maybe you're able to generate a little bit more offense in those minutes too. The ripple effects of that obviously would be now you've got to switch Jimmy Butler's minutes, because Miami doesn't want to have it at any point where one of those two guys are not on the floor. But I think that, and like, I know that Jimmy wants to play the whole first quarter and he wants to come in midway through in the whole third and then come back in midway through the fourth, but it's the finals. You know what I mean? Like, if you got to get out of your comfort zone a little bit, I think Jimmy Butler would be very much okay with that. That's kind of my, if I'm thinking about adjustments for Miami, I'm really looking hard at that one. And then in terms of minutes also, what Murray and Jokic have been averaging 45 minutes in this series. Bam and Jimmy are averaging 40. It might be time to kick that up, because like I said, you go down 3-1, this thing is basically over.
Well, Denver did that in game three. I mean, Denver had been playing 40 minutes with their guys, but 44 and 45 respectively is almost the whole game. So that was an adjustment. And you wonder, 48 hours later, they got a game on Friday. You know, that's a quick turnaround, the quickest one of the finals. Does that play a factor in Denver's approach? Are they a little sluggish? We'll find out. But the question for me when you ask about adjustments, the abstract of it is Miami made a decision to go defense versus Denver. How do they match up to slow Denver's offense down as much as possible? And they shut down KCP and Michael Porter. Both have had D-minus offensive series so far, maybe an F, to be honest with you. That's how bad they've been. And yet it's not working. Denver's offense is still humming. And so I think the question Spoes has is the same one that the Lakers and the Suns arrived at eventually, which is, do we just go offense? Do we say, okay, they're scoring on us. How much better can their offense be if we put a little bit more offense out there, still try to stick to your schemes and everything else and outgun them? And I'm just curious if they do that or not. I kind of lean towards no, because it doesn't feel like a Miami Heat, Eric Spoelstra thing.
Exactly. I would be very surprised.
But at the same time, like I said, a 121 offensive rating before garbage time when you put your defensive lineup out there. Maybe Denver's a team you have to outgun. I don't know.
I think in terms of the indicators that Spo likes to talk about and measures after these games, the turnovers were low. The rebounding's got to be better. But I know that that's an easy talking point just if you're box score watching. I think the percentages were much closer in terms of rebounding rate. Just Miami missed so many freaking shots course, Denver's going to have way more defensive rebounds. And Denver shot 51% or something from the field. So there's going to be fewer rebounds available for Miami on the defensive end. So I think that's part of it. But also keeping the turnovers low. And then like kind of blocking, kind of like, blunting those transition, semi-transition opportunities by Denver. They did a great job of that in games one and two, not a great job of that in game three. That's the stuff I'm going to be focused on in game three. And then obviously you're going to have to make shots. Look, they're down 2-1. I said coming into the series, if Miami shoots 40% or better from three-point range in like three of the first five games, they're going to have a chance in this series. That's still on the table for them, right? So I don't think that the series is over, but if they lose Friday night, it's pretty much over at that point. All right, coming up, what's at stake for Nikola Jokic in these finals? And if he wins and the Denver Nuggets win these finals, why he could become the NBA's most important player? We're going to talk about that next. But first, today's episode of Locked On NBA is brought to you by Bird Dogs. Bird Dogs, they make you look good. Bird Dogs stretch khaki shorts are designed to fit slimmer through the thigh and leg, giving you a truly sculpted look. Bird Dog shorts do the exact same thing as Lululemon, but fit way better. They fit way better than regular shorts that are made of a stiff, restricting cotton, because Bird Dogs has fixed this issue by inventing this cloud knit fabric that looks just like khaki but stretches so you get a way slimmer fit without having to sacrifice movement. Bird Dogs use anti-stink sweat wicking fabric that keeps you cool and dry all day long. They sent us a few of these shorts before this campaign. I got to tell you, I love them, especially in this Florida weather. I think they're perfect. That dry fit fabric is great. It keeps me cool, keeps my legs looking good. I feel good walking to the grocery store, maybe even coming to some of these Miami Heat practices. I don't mind that khaki look. It's a little formal. It's not bad. I can get away with it in this Miami weather. You can get a pair of Bird Dogs yourself. All you got to do is go to birddogs.com/lockedonNBA. Enter the promo code LockedOnNBA for a free Yeti-style tumbler with your order. That's birddogs.com/lockedonNBA for a free Yeti-style tumbler. You're not going to want to take your Bird Dogs off, we promise you. Thanks again for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. Adam, I remember you and I talking about a couple of times the star power of Nikola Jokic and these playoffs, how his star just seems to be on the rise every round, every single round. And now in the NBA Finals, I find it so interesting because people are wondering, oh my God, the NBA has got to be so upset that it's Nuggets Heat. Meanwhile, the TV ratings are awesome for these finals. I think people are realizing that, hey, you know what? These teams both play an interesting brand of basketball. Jimmy Butler is a weirdo. Like, he's interesting to watch. Nikola Jokic is just like Magic Johnson in a center's body and doing these crazy things. And it's high scoring and it's fun, right? And I think these TV ratings are reflecting that people just have an appetite for very great basketball. And I think more than anything, it's a reflection on who's this Nikola Jokic guy? What's he all about? Oh my gosh, this is so much fun to watch. I'm going to come back and watch game two. I'm going to come back and watch game three because the ratings have been great consistently throughout the finals so far. It kind of just feels like he's gone through boss battles, right? Like he beat Kevin Durant. He beat LeBron James. And now he's got to beat Eric Spoelstra and Jimmy Butler. And if you think about LeBron, KD, the Miami Heat, these are kind of teams, entities, people who have, for better or worse, kind of dominated this last era. You know, I think you obviously would throw the Warriors in there, but that wasn't an obstacle for Denver in this playoffs. But if Jokic and the Nuggets get through this, does it feel like at this point, this is like just boss battle after boss battle after boss battle? And now, because you've won all these boss battles, you are now the champion. You get to wear the crown. And that if you're Nikola Jokic, you're sort of the bona fide number one player in the NBA. You kind of just are that guy. You've got the belt at this point.
I mean, first of all, you talk about the status of just how they're respected. I don't remember, Wes, anybody ever putting up a 30-20-10 game in the finals. I don't remember it because it's never happened. In fact, it's only happened five times in NBA playoff history, and three of them are from Jokic. So at some point, it's funny, man. I mean, we're two wins away. 2 years ago, the Phoenix Suns were two wins away from winning, and I think we were ready to say Devin Booker is, you know, elevated to a different level, and they lost. So I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but in terms of setting the table for just what does dominance look like, it's never looked like this. And we've seen some great playoff runs, and it's never looked quite the way it does right now. And then when you talk about the bosses, Rudy Gobert, I know he gets a bad rap, but he's one of the best interior defenders in the NBA.
You're right. I forgot about him.
Part of why he gets a bad rap is he keeps running into Jokic in the playoffs. Like, sometimes you have to just say, hey, man, maybe he's not as bad as everyone says, but look, you're just going up against someone a little better. You go up against Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. And it's funny because I heard somebody last night trying to talk about who's it has an argument for best player in the world. And they're like, I don't know. KD's still in there. And I'm thinking, did we not watch this? We watched Jokic versus KD. It was clear that one had a significantly bigger impact on the offensive end, let alone on both ends of the court.
If we're just judging it off that series, I would say Devin Booker was better than Kevin Durant.
Of course.
We're judging it just off that series, yeah.
And these things matter, right? Like, we watched it play out on the biggest stage. And then you go to Anthony Davis, who, again, we forget, but that was built as the best offensive big versus the best defensive big. That lasted one game. Jokic had 40 points. They moved him off Jokic, saying, okay, we concede. We got to come up with a different plan. And then to go up against the combination of Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, and Eric Spoelstra, if none of those things cause a speed bump, which is, this is that's the way you look at it. It's not like, well, they had success here. None of them have had success. The numbers are what they are. They don't matter. It's triple-double, 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 and every fourth game or so, historic triple-double. And so if you go through that, that is going through all the various types of bosses and all the best bosses, and to not be bothered by it, it's unbelievable.
I can't, like, watching him in person over these last three games has been such a treat also, because you just see the way, first of all, the guy's huge. You notice that in person. You know, you obviously see the stats on the box score, and you see, like, his whatever. But he's so patient. He is so in control of the game, and he really doesn't, like, at any point feel like he's dominating in the way that we typically associate superstars with dominating. Like, I think, like, you know, guys like even like Kobe, where it's just like, all right, I'm going to shoot seven times in a row. And you're like, go for it, Kobe, like, mama mentality. Let's do this. Steph Curry with, like, the crazy, like, 30 footers that he's making, that just, like, in one shot, just drain the life out of an entire arena. Right. Like, Steph has that ability to just make this ridiculous bonkers 3-pointer and just kill an opposing arena. Right. Jokic doesn't do that, yeah, right? And, like, one shot. It's just sort of like, I just being here in Miami, watching that game, like, it was close for a quarter and a half, almost, well, basically until halftime, it was close. And all of a sudden you look up and Denver's up 20 and you're like, what happened? Wait, Jokic has how many rebounds? How many points? He's one more assist away from a triple-double. Like, what's going on here? And he just sort of slowly drains the life out of you. And to me, that it's such an interesting way to watch basketball and to appreciate a superstar. And then, of course, he has the highlight plays, right? Like, the crazy passes, right, the lobs to Aaron Gordon, like the behind the back stuff, how he's seeing, like, his guys get open in a blink where his head's not even turned that way. Eric Spoelstra the other day saying, like, the only way to defend him is if your head spins around 365 degrees. That's the only way to defend Nikola Jokic. And then he pointed out, and we can't do that. And it's like, obviously. So I don't know. I think at this point, your dominance point is a very good one, because I don't know the last time we had just sort of a clear number one since LeBron basically ceded that status, right? LeBron was that for what, 10, 12 years, where it was just like, it's LeBron and it's everybody else.
Right.
And if the Nuggets are able to finish this off and Jokic is playing this way for the rest of these finals, however long they last, we might be at the point where I think it's going to be pretty clear. Like, it's going to be Jokic and everybody else. And if they win the championship, I think, quite frankly, he's earned it.
It's so funny because I think everybody's reluctant to say what should be obvious. I mean, 30, 13, and 10? He's averaging a triple-double on 60, 50, 90 shooting splits. Like, what are we doing? This is, of course...
Well, the big thing was the defensive problem. But like you said, like, they've basically covered that up. No player... He's not... You know, no player is perfect, but he's right. Freaking close, man. He's close, especially... The way that they're playing defensively and covering up for him and all the offseason moves, everything that you guys have covered in Denver really well. I think there was coming into this, these playoffs, like, is it Giannis? Is it Embiid? You know, KD at stretches. Like, I get it. But if he finishes run off in the dominant way he's done it, yeah, I think you've earned it at that point.
Right. And then there's the question of the star part of it, which is, I think, interesting because that's different than the dominance part of it. But the star part of it, we've seen the ratings. We've seen the social media stat that Adam Silver loves to tout, that he's the number one guy people are looking for. And then I come back to Pat McAfee had, I can't remember who, oh, he had Kendrick Perkins on. And he was telling him, I haven't watched a lot of Jokic because he doesn't make the big shows. You know, Pat McAfee's an all sports guy. You know, he's watching, he's seeing the narratives that are set by the various leagues. And then we'll talk about that. He's sitting here and he's saying what I think so many people feel, which is, I had no idea I was going to like this guy this much because it wasn't fed to me. You had to work to find him, right? You had to make a point of, okay, I'm going to hop on League Pass and do this, and you don't get the story. I think so many people are being woken up to the idea that this guy is not what he was billed as, boring dominance, but also not really dominant. It's like fake dominance. I think people are like, no, absolute dominance. And oh, by the way, fun as hell, because something new is fun and he does it in a new way. And I always say him and Steph Curry are the only two basketball players that I think make me laugh. And that's through history. Like, there's players that impress you and take your breath away, but the only ones that make you laugh are Steph, because he'll shoot a three from the logo and you just, what can you do but laugh about it? And then Jokic, because his game, he does things that are so unconventional but makes him look so effortless that you just end up walking away laughing. Like, how did he just throw that pass? Like, what was he thinking?
That's a great sort of Mount Rushmore kind of status to keep. Like, the players that make you laugh the most. I would throw, like, prime LeBron in there. Like, everyone, I would just be like, how did he get through the lane there? Like, oh my God, he's shooting 60%, like, on like, he's like, some of that stuff that he was doing. I would put
it's almost put meaner, though. You know what I mean?
That's
it's
true. Almost,
it's like, there's a different,
it's like nervous laughter.
Yeah, exactly. I would have to think about who else is on the list.
I think Giannis was some of those like pogo man, like slinky arm things. You're like, wait, how did he put that in the basket from, like, you know, I think some of that stuff, but it's great. It's a great kind of framework. I get the point. We talked about this, I think, coming into the playoffs of the series where, what was it, the Chris Mannix thing, talking about how, like, nobody wants to cover Denver Nuggets because they're not interesting, man, or whatever it was. And one of the things I pointed out to you was, on one hand, like, I think they're very interesting, but I get why, like, the average Joe doesn't, because I don't have people coming up to me in my life being like, did you see what Nikola Jokic did last night? And I think, to your point, you have to work for it. They're not – even in Denver, you have to work for it. And they're not on national TV nearly as much as they should be. But now that they're on this stage, now I've got people – now I've got those people. I've got that anecdotal evidence, Adam. I really do. Like, people be like, wait, did you know Jokic was like this? And people in my life are saying that to me. I was like, yeah, I knew Jokic was like this. I've watched the NBA for a living. I knew Jokic. I'm glad you now know that Jokic is like this. So it's really cool. I think it's great for the league, obviously. Not breaking news there. And like I said, if this thing looks like it's going to go the way it looks like it's going to go, he might just be the number one. He might be numero uno, and it might be everybody else just playing catch up. And the other part of this too, you know what, why it might be the most important kind of development in the NBA. I want to touch that on the other side of this break, and then we'll get to some big names that could potentially be on the move this summer. I think all of this sort of relates in a weird way. We're going to talk about that next. First, today's episode of Locked On NBA is brought to you by FanDuel. Make a fast break to FanDuel during the NBA playoffs, because right now new customers can get a no sweat first bet up to $2,500. That's $2,500 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. There's no better place to bet the playoff action than America's number one sports book. If you're feeling good about Denver, maybe finishing this thing off Friday night, you know they're going to be favorites, but the money's been pretty good. The money's been pretty tight this whole time. You might be able to make some money on that one. If you feel like the Heat are going to take care of home court, well, they're going to be the underdogs. That's where you can bet them. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn. Get a no-sweat first bet up to $2,500. That's FanDuel.com/LockedOn. FanDuel, official sports betting partner of the NBA. All right, before we get to some big names on the move or potentially on the move this offseason, Adam, just one last point. If the Nuggets, number one seed in the West, go on, win the NBA Finals, it's Nikola Jokic's league now, all these things, I think it's going to impact team construction because you just mentioned the Lakers didn't have an answer. The Timberwolves didn't have an answer. The Suns didn't have an answer. If they win this series, the Heat are not going to have had an answer. I don't know what team does have the answer. I don't know if Boston would have done a better job, Adam. I really don't think that they would have. And when you think about that, you think about the way that Steph owned the league for a long time and all these things and every team trying to find ways to counter that, right? I think we're going to maybe see a trend of, okay, if the league goes through Denver now, how do we match up? Because nobody's found an answer yet. And now I think you might have teams trying to add size to their rosters where before they were trying to get smaller to kind of keep up with the Warriors. I know I'm getting ahead of myself here, but I find all of this so interesting.
Well, I think even if Denver loses, the West has to look at themselves and say, okay, probably going through Denver point. For a while. Yeah. So even us, and I made this point, but after the bubble, you saw teams pick up a backup center that didn't have one before in 2021. And I think that was why they're like, okay, if we get in a playoff series, we need to have another body to throw out there just to have somebody. And like Miami right now, we're talking about Cody Zeller. Not that he's the most important player to have on a roster, but teams might look at it and say, yeah, but we need better than that. Like, we need somebody just stashed there. DeMarcus Cousins, I think, is going to be in the league, for example, next year. Like, I wouldn't be surprised. Teams didn't want to take the risk. They might say, hey, we need to, though. We need somebody that can at least make him maybe foul or do whatever. And so I think that
did not have a DeMarcus Cousins prediction on my bingo card for today's show. That's very good.
But this is why getting a repeat, let alone a three-peat, is so hard to do, is then teams start to say, okay, that's the team we're chasing. How do we stop them? And Jokic's run has been so dominant that I think every team is going to look at it and say, we've got to build a roster to stop that team. And it's not just Jokic, by the way. It's all of the different pieces. But last thing, Wes, and you'll find this interesting. You probably didn't get a Tim Connelly mention on this too, but everybody laughs at the Gobert trade. And I think they overpaid. Just they could have gotten him for cheaper probably. But you know, they've got Karl-Anthony Towns and Gobert. And anybody that watched that series, that was the series I think Jokic had to work the hardest because, again, the best defense, we talked about the Rui adjustment, the best defense is one big on Jokic, one big off of Jokic, rim protecting. They have that. And I honestly think Tim Connelly coming from Denver probably looked around and said, no, you guys don't get it. This guy's going to be here for a while, and he's going to be the guy. You're all sleeping on the fact that they didn't have Murray. Otherwise, everyone would be seeing it. He saw it firsthand and probably said he's ahead of the curve, so to speak, to say, hey, we built a roster that is hopefully going to grow into something that can give him problems.
You are absolutely right. I did not have – what a great swerve. Actually, that Minnesota trade for Gobert was actually genius. That's an even better swerve. Well,
an overpay, but I'm just saying, man, like, I think a lot of teams that the two bigs it's are fair. Like, that's a dumb thing. I think a couple teams are going to be like, we need two bigs.
Yeah, I mean, and we've already seen some more teams kind of go, even Boston, right? Robert Williams and Al Horford kind of going more and more that direction. I don't know that Boston did that specifically for Jokic. I think there's other reasons for that. Maybe it was because of Embiid, right? I mean, these two guys, 1 and 2 in the MVP race the last 3 years. So we'll see. We're going to move off of the finals, though, for a little bit here because the offseason is right around the corner. We've got some rumblings that some big names could be on the move here. Chris Paul, that news yesterday at the Suns, could maybe buy him out or wave and stretch him. Or maybe even be looking to trade him. Damian Lillard on a podcast saying that he'd like to play in Miami and Brooklyn if he doesn't come back to Portland. We have obviously the Kyrie stuff. Where do you want to start, Adam?
I think with the idea that we're a week away and from free agent, like once the season ends, we know everybody turns their attention to the immediate offseason, which starts almost right after the finals. It's shaping up. I feel like the rumors are a little early this year. You know, it's shaping up that Damian Lillard, as you mentioned, Chris Paul, Kyrie Irving, there's just a lot of guys that I think could be on the move before we even get to the rumors that we don't see coming. So it's going to be eventful.
I think you're absolutely right. I think there's been some people like, oh, it's kind of a bad free agent class. I think that's why we see the rumors starting now, because if you really want to go and make a serious move and sort of elevate your roster, then it's going to probably be in a trade, right? If you're not the Spurs and getting Wembanyama, then it's probably going to be in a trade. Mm-hmm. And And I think these point guards are Kyrie, Chris Paul, Damian Lillard. Like, if all three of those guys are playing a new play, those guys could impact their teams in major ways. Obviously, biased. I found the Damian Lillard news very intriguing, that the first words out of his mouth were, hey, Miami. Like, obviously, Miami. And then he was quick to mention Brooklyn also. But talking about how those teams have almost, I think he views those teams as sort of title ready if he just walks in. And I think you could argue that that's certainly the case for Miami. And I, depending on what Brooklyn will have to give up, maybe it's even the same for the Nets. But I think you're right. I think we're going to see some fireworks this summer, because even if Denver wins this, there's going to be a race to be like, all right, who's going to fill the void? The Milwaukee thing is up in the air. Who knows what's going to happen to Philadelphia? The way that Boston flamed out and so disappointing, do we really buy them? I think that the West, you're not going to – it's wide open. I think it would be wide open other than Denver. It's like, okay, we have a real chance to get to the Western Conference Finals. You know what I mean? Like, right. I don't, with everything happened with Phoenix and Golden State, like, who's the second best team in the West? I don't know.
I even wonder about teams like the Clippers, who have kind of like trusted their core, even though it's been through injuries. They don't have bigs, and Jokic murdered them 3 years ago in the playoffs in the bubble. I do wonder if they look at it and go, are we sure the Paul George, Kawhi Leonard's the right formula? Because that doesn't look like it's going to impact what we just saw. And I think you have to have a realistic conversation with yourself if you're one of those teams. But I want to go back to Dame, because Dame has been slow about the, like, forcing his way out of Portland. He hasn't done it. I do think that they're in such an interesting spot because they have that number three pick. And I think this is Dame talking about it more than ever before. I think it's a little bit of his way of saying, guys, you need to make a decision. And I know, and he's even said the pressure of like, they're not, I don't want a draft pick.
He's been very obvious. Right? This has not been reading the tea leaves. This has just been reading the leaves.
And I think he's looking at it saying, and honestly, they're at an impasse in Portland, because to be perfectly honest, can you build a title contender that competes with these Nuggets by just trading the number three pick? I don't think so. I think they're.
I've seen like people parsing the Mikal Bridges quote. He's like, Mikal Bridges is my dog on the podcast, and being like, oh, it's not he wants to go play with Bridges in Brooklyn. He wants Portland to trade for Bridges. I love Mikal Bridges. I think he's an awesome player. I don't think adding Bridges to Damian Lillard and maybe you re-sign Jeremy Grant, I don't think that that's a legit contender. I think that's a sixth seed, a fifth seed maybe. Like, it's a good team.
It's enough. It's enough to keep Dame, though. Like, it's enough to sell maybe Dame on hay.
Until the trade deadline, when they're 10 games under 500 or hovering around 500.
I think that team would be better than that by a lot, but I don't think they would be better to win a championship. But it might be enough to tell yourself, hey, we're giving our best shot, and sometimes that's all players want. But nonetheless, my bigger point is the best move might be to trade Dame. And I know that sucks. And I hate to do this to fan bases because I'm, as a small market guy, I hate to do that thing. But if you look at it, Portland has to decide, can we build a realistic contender? Even if that's just a fringe contender with a puncher's chance, that's good enough. You do it. But if you can't, maybe that's part of where Dame is kind of getting at, is even hinting at, look, guys, you have your work cut out for you, but if you can't do it, That's where we arrive at this amicable split of, hey, I always wanted to be here, but if we're just in a spot where it's not possible, then let's make some decisions.
I do wonder what that trade will look like, because they'd probably look at it and be like, all right, let's get the Rudy Gobert haul. Let's get get the Paul George haul. Like, let's do that. I don't know if that's coming from anywhere. I mean, Damian Lillard just had the best season of his career by the numbers. Most points per game he's ever scored. He's still an awesome player. And I think he's got a lot more years left of being an awesome player. But he's also making $60 million, 4 years from now when this extension, after this extension starts? He's making a lot of money, and I just don't know with the new tax aprons structure, how many teams could just, like, literally afford him. Like, not whether or not they think he's worth that or not, just afford him, added to their roster. There's not a lot of teams that could do it. I go back to Miami. This would be the one summer where they can do it before some of these other extensions kick in. If they're going to make that move, this would be the time. It would have to be these next few months. Brooklyn, they probably have a little bit more of a timeline on it. But again, I don't like, they probably have to give up so much for him that if he's being added to that team, I don't know that team is still a title contender. So he was also mentioned, he was asked about the Knicks and the Celtics, and he kind of didn't really talk about those teams. So I don't really know, like a Trae Young, Damian Lillard swap. What's that really doing for both teams? I don't feel awesome about that if I'm Portland. Like,
that's the one. But I think that you're also getting at something that's interesting, which is, there is a aging class of players that includes LeBron James, Chris Paul, Damian Lillard, where there's the new young guys have now firmly established themselves. Giannis, Jokic, you know, this new wave of players is clearly their league now. And the old heads are trying to fight for one last, you know, thing, including Dame, by the way. Like, he's a great player, but I don't know how many more years he has of being a number one championship guy. Right. So you're looking at that. And I do think that there is probably a sense of it's now. This is why I think there'll be more movement. And this is why the rumors are starting early. James Harden, you know, who knows what happens with Jaylen Brown. You know, like, there's players that are big names that I think are going to become available. And not just available, but maybe saying, like, hey, I want to be in a place where I can compete. And there's just more of them, I think, than people realize. And we're just at the calm before the storm.
Well, we'll have it all covered here on Locked On NBA. Plus, obviously, finals coverage throughout the series. Thanks for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. Every day, or make sure that you're subscribed to the show. It's going to be back on Monday with the biggest stories from around the NBA from over the weekend. In the meantime, you can find me over at Locked On Heat and Adam over in Locked On Nuggets. Adam, have a great weekend. Enjoy game five.